Yesterday, the Arizona Chamber of Commerce filed a lawsuit against InvestInEd, saying the Income Tax Education Funding Ballot Initiative was, quote, poorly crafted and included misleading language. The goal is to kick the measure off the ballot.
Late last week, a lawsuit was filed against Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona, the ballot initiative that wants a constitutional amendment for renewable energy by 2030. The suit came from the parent company of APS and cited legal flaws like improper registration from the Secretary of State's office and language that was confusing for Arizona voters. And Save Our Schools Arizona, the referendum on ending the expansion of charter schools in the state, successfully fought two court challenges claiming inaccurate information on its ballot petitions.
With us to talk about the words used to describe ballot measures is Joe Canefield. He's a partner at Ballard Spahr and a former Arizona elections director. Joe, good morning.
Good morning.
So how significant is the language that voters see either when they go to the polls or before that when they sign or don't sign a petition?
Well, you know, the courts have told us that that language is pretty significant. When you sign someone's petition, the law requires on the top of that petition that there be a 100-word summary of the principal provisions of what you're signing. Obviously, that can't include everything that's going to be in the measure itself, but it does have to include the principal provisions. And the courts have said if there's language in that description that's confusing or misleading, then that's going to invalidate those petitions. And the same is also true of the ballot language itself. When voters go to the polls and they vote their ballot, that is the last thing they see before they cast their vote yes or no for a particular measure. And the courts have also said that that language is very important. It has to be neutral. It can't be confusing. It can't mislead voters in any way. So we often see challenges on these questions because of the importance of that and the significance of that language to the election process.
Well, so as you say, Joe, there's a 100-word summary. And obviously, as you mentioned, you can't put everything in there. Mm-hmm. Who gets to decide, like, what is important, what is the most salient point, and how much detail to go into? Because it seems as though both Republicans and Democrats have at various points in this election cycle been upset at the other over how those 100 words were chosen.
Well, it's very common. That's a very good question. In the first instance, obviously, the proponents of the measure decide how they want to word that language, and that's important because, like I said, that's what the signer is going to see. Often, they don't read past that. I mean, the actual text of the measure has to be attached to the petition, so anybody signing a petition has the right to thumb through and look at it. But usually, you know, they don't get past that summary or the description that the circulator has told them. But it ultimately comes down to the court in these instances, because if someone, a challenger, doesn't believe that that language was fair and neutral, then was confusing and misleading to voters, or you know, I guess in the worst case scenario, designed to fraud voters into signing a petition, then the court's going to strike it down. You know, and that leads to another interesting issue that has presented itself this election cycle, Mark, and that is that the standard that the court applies when reviewing these petitions depends on whether it's a citizen initiative or a citizen referenda. If the citizens are initiating their own laws, the courts have been very lenient and very deferential to the citizens, applying what we call a substantial compliance standard. That means you don't have to be perfect in how you put these petitions together, and you may make some technical mistakes, but they're not going to be fatal, or the court's not going to strike the measure down. But under the more strict compliance standard, which the court has applied for decades, really since statehood, in the referenda context, and that's when the citizens are exercising their right to suspend a law passed by, say, the Arizona legislature until the next election, and where the citizens can decide whether they want that law to go into effect or not. And in that instance, because the citizens, a small percentage of the citizens, you don't need as many signatures to put a referenda on the ballot, those citizens are upholding a duly passed law by the representative legislature. The court has said you've got to be in strict compliance. You've got to dot every I, you've got to cross every T, and if there's any mistakes, then it's going to be stricken. And I bring that up only because the legislature a couple of years ago enacted a statute that said, instructed the courts from this point forward to apply that more exacting scrutiny, that strict compliance standard, to initiatives. And there's some serious constitutional questions about whether the legislature can tell the court how to judge these issues. And these issues are now, they've now ripened. That's the word we use in the law.
Right.
They've presented themselves to the court, and we're going to likely see some resolution of that question. I mean, I just had this question in a local ballot measure down in Pima County that we argued in court early this week, and the court from the bench, the judge from the bench said that the legislature can't tell the court what standard to apply in these cases, and the court would continue to apply a substantial, more lenient review of the citizen initiative process.
And that, of course, will come up as the proposition dealing with the expansion of school vouchers is on the ballot this November. That's Joe Canefield, partner at Ballard Spahr, former Arizona elections director. Joe, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Lauren.